Greetings, this is James Gill, and I'm your host. We've got another great show today. We're going to cover GMOs and some incredible work that's being done on the Big Island to actually ban these GMOs and kind of safeguard our food and our environment. There's so much work on this venue here. I want to bring on Margaret Willey, who's actually passed a bill on the Big Island and to ban some of these UFOs and to, you know, she chairs the Ag and Water and Air Sustainability group there. So without any further ado, I want to bring Margaret on the show. Are you with us?
I'm here. Thank you very much.
Is it okay if I call you Margaret?
Yes, okay. That's fine.
It's great. This is an amazing event that's almost a historical event. And I think what's starting on the island there, on the Big Island, is going to make waves and take off across the country, I hope.
Well, you know, it seems very modest to me. I mean, yeah. It's a very modest bill, but I think it's what's maybe momentous about it is that it marks a shift towards a different way of thinking and incorporates, you know, that we do have a stewardship role and focus not just on ourselves, but future generations, and not just on the soil today, but on protecting our soil and our land and our water for current and future generations. So,
and I know these things spill over into the other crops, and I've done research on the GMOs and the side effects of these GMOs, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about that as far as okay. The long-term effects.
Yeah, and let me just say, just so people understand what my bill, and this is on the Big Island or Hawaii Island, which is one of four counties in the state of Hawaii. So it would ban open air cultivation of GMO crops and plants. We do have an exception for papaya. And papaya has been, GMO papaya has been around for about 10 years, which was, they've studied it far more than most GMO plants. And it isn't ordinarily bee or wind pollinated, so it can be handled a little bit better. But the main thing about the GMO papaya is it is just so pervasive. There's just no way, it would be nigh impossible to say no more. Even it's so spread around the island. So mm-hmm. Now, in terms of the impacts, what I'll say is that, you know, there is science on both sides. But I think, in my view, we need to live by the precautionary principle. And when there is uncertainty, we certainly shouldn't sit around and say, oh, just go ahead, where there could be irreversible consequences. Mm-hmm. So that's the key thing. And I think that a lot of the opponents say, well, oh, here, I've been eating GMOs for 20 years and I'm not, you know, sick or ill. Well, you know, the reality is that the effect of the GMOs, it basically affects the immune system and affects the ability of the body to prevent the impacts of toxins. So it's not like you go and get, you know, eat something with GMO and, you know, something happens the next day. And the other thing is that there are more vulnerable populations. It's really to children and unborn children where the impact is the greatest. And so I think that it's on some of the experiments, say with mature rats and very young rats, it was, you know, it's much higher in the young. Now, the problem, you know, when you say, so why is this a problem? You know, we're just doing science and we're looking at how to improve things and make something so it resists this disease or, you know, has a tougher skin or whatever kind of quality they're looking for. But the real key is the political policy adopted by the U.S. to that a GMO crop or a GMO is what they call substantially equivalent to the corresponding non-GMO, so that instead of requiring human or animal testing, it's considered to be, it gets an exemption. So there's really absolutely no human animal health studies, safety studies being required. No.
Yeah. I know there have been studies which I've looked into, and I saw what happened to rats, and they always cut the study off, you know, when the rat starts, you know, exhibiting tumors and testicle cancer and things of that nature. They cut it off and they said, okay, we tested the rats for 6 months and everything's fine or something. And then at 7 months, you know, the cancer comes over, and at 8-9 months, it's dead, you know? So.
Yeah. Well, it's usually 90 days is the maximum. Now what we have, and this is through Department of Agriculture, their ag plant group, is they can come in and do a voluntary consultation. And so the biotechs or ag chemical companies bring in their own studies, which, to my knowledge, are the max is 90 days, and show it and show their data. And then they'll get a letter saying, we've reviewed your voluntary submissions. And, you know, like you say, your data shows that this is just fine. So there's nothing independent. I think one of the things that irritates me is this mantra they have, that there's a consensus of scientists believe that this is safe, which is so absurd. I mean, it epitomizes the power of language, and that if you repeat something, no matter how false, and you repeat it en masse, that it actually suddenly, oh, well, I guess that must be true. Whereas none of these, so many of these people that sign on to that, they are looking at the corporation's data. Mm-hmm. And they're so powerful that they're able to block a lot of the independent studies. Or really, the patent laws, our intellectual property laws, make it so that the knowledge and data that you would need to do independent studies is not obtainable without their permission. So you call up one of them and say, I'd like to do an independent study on whether this product is harmful, and they say, I'm sorry, patent laws protect us, we're not going to give it to you.
Wow.
So, and the other thing is, where there have been independent studies, such as there's an international foundation that was doing research with bees, the harm to bees, and one of them just bought it right out, just, and that door closed.
Wow.
But the other thing is that you'll find that almost all of the independent studies, that one of their tactics is to discredit the scientists that are doing it, or the advocate, so that it makes it independent scientists fearful, where suddenly there are going to be calls and moves to get you kicked out or things said against you. I mean, even on the island of Hawaii, there's a woman that's works with the school garden program, and she helps with a nonprofit there. And there's suddenly it's talked about that she's a pawn for the mainland anti-GMO conspiracy, and getting calls to the board of directors, where she, the nonprofit that does food and garden and ag. Mm-hmm. Research. I mean, it's just, so you just have, you know, this bully.
Yeah.
That's what it is, this big bully that just figures they are so arrogant, they can just absolutely do what they want.
I think that's why they got the nickname Monsatan, you know, because they bully their way through everything. I know a lot of research was done, and people that went forward actually end up losing their jobs, or they lost tenure, you know, at the university they're at, or just some heavy handedness came down on them. And all they wanted to do is provide, you know, independent research on GMOs, and that's a no-no. That's like a career ender.
Right. But keep in mind, what are they doing? They are looking at their corporate bottom line. Mm-hmm. And that is what that private entity, what one would assume. It's our government, our federal government, where we go and I hire whoever it is, Michael Taylor, to be head of that department, who was previously Monsanto's, I think, their key lawyer and lobbyist. Yeah. And now he said there's just this complicity between the government and these – I mean, even our federal – administrators, our state administrators, just roll over and kowtow to them like they were God Almighty. Mm-hmm. I mean, in fact, right now, if you start reading up on some of these international trade agreements, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, mm-hmm. and the EU-US, whatever it's called, pact, what they're trying to do is say, no, we have to harmonize our regulatory procedures so that no country can, so that they're able to circumvent the local, or say in Europe, their national regulatory schemes over GMOs. Mm-hmm. And even saying that those countries will have to pay the multinational if they don't if their local or national or state level legislation interferes with their corporate policy and interferes with their profits. So I mean, these guys, I mean, you know, just a study in power. They are good. They are really good. Yeah. So I think that's why it's really come down to the local level. I mean, here in Hawaii, that's our island of Hawaii, we have our bill, which is still not law. We have to get past the mayor's veto. Mm-hmm. And then the island of Kauai also just passed a bill. Now, in Kauai, it's experimental corn. And I can't remember how many thousands of acres are there that they now have in experimental corn. Mm-hmm. But everyone, there's all this illness going on, and the aquatic, all the urchins are dying, and the water's along there, and deformed babies, and it's really very sad. So what I'm trying to say is, look, how can we ignore what we see going on around the world, Latin America, Europe, Kauai? Let's just hold our island is the one island where, other than papaya, really, and one large farm that does a dairy farm, largely there's no other GMOs. So why don't mm-hmm. we protect this one island as a place that as close as possible to make it GMO free. I mean, even if you were pro GMO, even if you're looking at the state as a whole, you have three GMO dominated islands or counties, and one that's not. Why not let us have that niche market around the world, which is really where the world's moving? I mean, you look at Chipotle, that restaurant. They announced that they are going to go at least largely non-GMO in 2014, and their stock jumped 15% in 24 mm-hmm. hours. So I think that we're trying to do something, and I don't think it's any too soon. A lot of the arguments on our island have been, Margaret, come on, let's just have a study committee and we'll work on this. And then when we look it all over, we'll figure it out. And then we'll do some legislation. And why are you jumping the gun? And my point is, we need to close the door while that discussion is going on. And that's how my bill is set up. There's companion legislation, an ad hoc committee, and we're going to look at, you know, in some more detail, because basically what my bill does is it grandfathers the papaya industry and all others that are currently engaged in open air cultivation of GMO crops or plants, provided that they register. So it's, to me, it's like such a baby step. It's mm-hmm. just saying, let's halt where we are right now so we can have an adult conversation and make sure that we don't end up taking some risks that are irreversible, that are so, I mean, look at Mexico. Mexico judge just ordered that all transgenic corn production in Mexico must cease because it's an imminent health threat. You know, for us to do something else is like ignoring the cries and the voice from India, from Latin America, from around the world.
Yeah, Europe. I know Germany's getting on top of it, and I think France, I'm not sure, but a lot of countries are just banning, you know, wheat and corn from the U.S., and that's going to be hurting the farmers down the road. So economically, it's a disaster. You know, the more people get educated, you know, considering what these GMOs do and the health effects of them. So to me, it's economically, economic suicide to continue on the same path we're on.
Right. And I think that it's that at least given those circumstances, we should proceed cautiously. I mean, at minimum, that's what we ought to do. So just like you were saying, the economy, I think if you heard about, you know, like the wheat in the Northwest, mm-hmm. and it's suddenly contaminated by a test crop from a number of, you know, quite a number of years ago, and suddenly it's appearing, or the corn that was supposed to be only a corn something linked corn, it was supposed to be only used for animals or for, anyway, non-human use, and suddenly it's in all the Taco Bell, it's in all yeah. over, and here it was. Where did it come from? How did it get there? And suddenly, suddenly it's just spread through the market. I mean, just take a look at even say the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, or countries that import a lot of the, I think it's the alfalfa from the Northwest U.S. And they're saying, you know, we don't want any GMOs. And you send in however many containers of, I don't know whether it's the seed or the or whatever they are, the alfalfa, and we're going to test it. And if one iota of GMO is in there, all of those containers come back at your expense. You know, uh-huh. So you realize this isn't something where the U.S. can just say, you know, at least in, maybe until all these, we manhandle all these other countries into signing these trade agreements that say they don't have any choice to regulate. But, you really causes, there is an economic issue. So you have an economic issue, then you have the health, long-term health issues, mm-hmm. because you're basically, it's the immune diseases. It's like the diabetes and, mm-hmm. you know, leaky gut and things that are sort of long-term chronic things that happen. And then you have also the cultural, the Peru, Costa Rica, Colombia, countries where the biotechs went in and sort of took over different communities, planting, say, soy and corn. And then at least according to what I read, you know, the government said, you're out. You no more. All the communities where this was being done, suddenly the people in that communities are ill and they no longer have their cultural base, their corn, where they knew how to deal with insects or problems that arose. It's just that you undermine the culture, just as in Mexico, corn is sort of really part of the basis of their, you know, the food of life and sort of a symbol of far more than just one item that we eat.
I agree. Yeah, it's just incredible what I know some officials there at Monsanto were making statements like, you know, they were one day they will, you know, own the entire food chain basically. And And they said just by introducing their crops, they're going to take over all the other crops. And they're just bragging about how they were just going to, you know, I guess, patent all the genes and own pretty much the entire food supply. And they had certain dates they were shooting for. But it was like, to me, that's just, I don't know, that's just pure tyranny, you know, to think that way, that you're going to take over, you know, a nation's food supply and then taint it with things that cause all kinds of you know, sometimes even short-term health effects that aren't good. But I mean, the long-term, you know, a lot of this stuff is looking like genocide, basically. It looks like some of the long-term effects are actually hitting people right, you know, where in their reproduction organs and things of that nature. So,
right.
Yeah, you look at the big picture, you go, wow, how can these guys do this without the research? And when they do the long-term research, that's what comes up. You know, people can no longer, you know, have children. Their cows come up infertile, and their livestock, you know, are having all kinds of serious reproduction problems. It's pretty much a form of insanity, if you ask me.
Right. Well, you know, they're doing really well on this effort to take control of food. I mean, when you say they're looking in that direction, I want you to know how successful they are. Mm-hmm. I mean, you take a look at the control of seeds, whether it's, say, corn, soy, canola. And so you have farmers, I mean, there are farmers on the mainland are saying, we want to get non-GMO corn or, say, or canola, and we can't get it. Where do we get it? Because exactly what you say, as soon as it's contaminated, as soon as you have some, how do you know? It's not like you can pick out, like they turn bright purple and you just cut those out. But it is, and I think the point that you're making is, it's like we're not just doing something to ourselves. We are, by affecting genes, and genes can mutate. I mean, you don't know what's happening long term and what you're doing to your kids and grandchildren. So that it's to me, it's like Fukushima. You know, here we are. We don't have control. We don't know. It's that uncertainty, and it affects us in ways that could be generational. Mm-hmm. So you look at, I think the other point that you brought up was sort of in terms of, you know, patenting life. I mean, the way the intellectual property law works really plays a big role in why the playing field is so skewed and favors these companies, and the legal system does, because our patent laws, our intellectual property laws, are based on strict liability. So they basically trump other law. They preempt all other law. So that if I'm growing GMO corn and you have your non-GMO, your, you know, organic farmer next door, and I've got mine, you know, from GMO corn from Monsanto or whoever I patented company I've got it from, and suddenly you're growing these quote unquote volunteer GMO plants, as I call them, you know, consider them trespassers. Those become that biotech company, the patent holders, owns them and can then go after you, even though you don't want them. You want to do organic farming and come in and take over and go out, usurp the profits from that whole, your whole crop. I mean, there's people who testified in Hawaii, organic papaya growers, where all they were growing was organic and they were doing everything organic. And then so they tested them and 70% of theirs was GMO. And they were so afraid of having the, you know, the biotech company come after them, they cut down every tree. Wow. You know, that you are, even though you had no intention to do it, they can come in and through strict liability, they and there's enhanced damages. I think they can get even up to triple damages come after you, so that if you become a farmer planting GMO crops, I'm really moving to a different thought here.
No, that's all right.
But you become, so like one farmer in the community where I am said, well, you know, Margaret, I might want to just try this GMO corn 1 year. Why don't I just try it? And, you know, a couple of the organic or non-GMO said, but, you know, if you do that, then you can contaminate us. You can contaminate our field. And we don't want it. You'll put our business, which is known as organic, out of business. He said, well, you know, I'll just do this. I just want to try it. Well, I think farmers who are sort of naive to how these companies work don't realize that you are transformed. When you buy those patented seeds, you're transformed from a farmer into a patent licensee. And you lose a lot of rights. It's just like on the when you're on your computer, you're at Starbucks, whatever, and it says you agree to these additional terms. You know, you press the button. There's one button that says you press. I agree to the growing GMO grower practice, you know, a production manual, you know, 30 to 35 pages. Well, all of that spells out the rights that if you have any problem with what their guarantees, your maximum recovery is the price you paid for the seeds, and you have to go to Missouri, a certain county in Missouri, to bring a lawsuit. That's the maximum on your side. On their side, they have the right under what if they suspect you're misusing their seeds, they can come on, they can go and check your fields, they can review all of your financial records. Wow. I mean, basically, you lose your status as an independent farmer. So I find a lot of in Hawaii, the big cry is freedom of choice, you know, protect the farmers, and the farmers have a hard life. And how can you add this additional regulatory burden? They are just acting out of ignorance. They're not mean or wrong or evil, but they just have no idea how it works. And the second thing is that it's the freedom of choice, the whole idea of freedom of choice. Do you have a freedom of choice that goes beyond the point to where you undermine your fellow property owner or your farmer next door, that you destroy their livelihood because you want to make your choice? You want to pick the one kind of seed that it is so dominant and is, say, you know, like wheat, and that it spread bees and wind. If the wind can carry it from point A to point B, you are at risk of your field being contaminated. Mm-hmm. And like I said, then you become you if you're suddenly growing, if you're suddenly by way of these trespassing seeds, then suddenly they come in and try to take over their crops. And I think that this aggressive litigation stance that they have, you know, they really, I guess in court they said there was a statement they made that if your field, there's less than 1% turns out to be GMO contaminated, we're not going to bring a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. I mean, how arrogant. You're destroying them because let's just say if you're an organic farmer, I mean, I have people in my district that want to grow non-GMO papaya. Those mm-hmm. non-GMO papaya are worth anywhere from 2 or 3 times more than the GMO ones, or 10 times more. Mm-hmm. But they don't know. You know, they pay an organic farmer, I believe, say, at least in Hawaii, you pay something like $450 or $500 each year, and plus to maintain that status, and plus they have someone inspect who, if they come along and find one papaya tree that's GMO, they lose their certification. Mm-hmm. So it's really, you know, you can look at these things from different levels of whether it's the political, the federal policy that there's no material difference between GMO product and the corresponding non-GMO. So, and then on the state level, there they are not, the state level tends to be, or at least in Hawaii has been, oh, we just do what the feds say. Well, the feds say nothing. So that means that the state says nothing. And therefore, someone like me, on it's our little local little municipalities around the country are the only ones that they sort of don't have a stranglehold. I mean, they either buy people out, they intimidate them, mm-hmm. or somehow beat them in court. So you know, they're really good. You know, you want to study power.
Yeah.
I mean, take a look here in Hawaii, our state legislature. I mean, here we are doing all of this in Kauai, and suddenly the governor announces, oh, well, we're going to do a voluntary program. And this is really more appropriate for the state. So we're going to this, and this is the plan, is this next 2014. Let's just implement some laws that prohibit these counties from getting out of hand. We need a uniform policy that promotes all kinds of agriculture, including GMO crops, despite the fact of all the harm that they're doing. So that's, and that's what's going to come up now. If the mayor passes this, and that's certainly not a certainty, and we would have to override that, and that's not a certainty, but let's just say, the mayor has enough spine to stand up and do this, and we get an override, a veto. I can assure you, the plans are, we're going to slap those little counties back in their place. And in fact, that's what this past year, there was a bill, SB 727, and it passed the Senate, and it was at the main hearing for the state, and I went there to testify, and what it said is it was gutting our county jurisdiction so that the county would have no just take our home rule statute and just cut out the words about health and life. In other words, the counties would have no jurisdiction over matters concerning health and welfare, and would just be involved with property and securing order. And so I just thought, went there and I said, is this a joke? But, you know, what's going on here? You're going to put the first layer of government and an ocean away from the people. And, you know, I'm the only government official there, and I can't, you know, like, where is everybody? Or do I just not understand what's going on? And then the people on the other side testify, and there are, you know, five people in representing Monsanto or representing the Farm Bureau. And basically what they said is, well, that's right. And we've achieved this in like 20 plus states, and these local governments and these, you know, interfere with our corporate policies. And I said, well, you're not going to do it here if I can stop you. But this is a bill that had passed the Senate of our state with only one person in opposition. One person. Wow. And cut the home rule of the counties. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and basically, you know, my bill is not a label bill, but there were efforts on the state level to do looking at, you know, consumer rights, taking the issue from that perspective and the right to know. And for years, none of those or any of the GMO could get through because they really had control of the two chairs of the ag committees. Well, now there's a different chair on the House Ag Committee. This is at the state level. And it was the first time there was ever a hearing on one of these issues, on a labeling bill. So I think that will come up, and that does, you know, you get into all of those interstate commerce issues. So I wanted to try to stay away from, you know, try to watch out on that. Mm-hmm. And let me just say, I need to I realize my battery is getting low. I need to plug this in right here. So I'm just going to get off, let you talk for a minute while I plug it in quickly, and I'll...
Okay, great. Yeah, it's interesting. I've been watching this, and I've seen a lot of farmers actually, you know, some went out of business because they were sued by Monsanto, who actually created a test crop right next to theirs. The seeds went over, and they had really nailed their corn. You know, they had the Terminator seeds, you know, that terminate the other corn. And as well as all of the bees and everything else, because they have the toxins built right into them, you know, the insecticides, which really tear up people's intestines on the inside when you eat that. But, you know, I watched these lawsuits come forward, and these guys lost in court, and they didn't do anything. All they did was happen to have their ranch next door to another GMO ranch that was growing the seeds, and they crossed over, you know, they trespassed on the organic farm. And the next thing you know, the Monsanto has taken these guys to court and suing them and winning, and they end up losing their entire crop and end up going out of business.
Yep. This is true. I mean, I think it's, I don't know, I guess it's maybe 2002 or early, about 10 years ago in Maine, they went after the dairy industry, and I think it's Oakhurst Dairy had put on their carton, you know, we don't use these growth hormones. I can't remember what the wording was. Uh-huh. And so Monsanto went in and brought lawsuits against all of these farms saying that that was defamation. And a lot of the smaller farms just sort of couldn't put up the fight and lost out or settled. And I think they finally did reach a settlement, but meanwhile, they really, in many ways, hurt that whole dairy industry around Maine. And it was a very powerful, lobbying force. Mm-hmm. You're not talking about some, small group.
Yeah. You know, I do believe in universal law, and I do believe in karma, you know. So the more these guys hammer down on these other people, I know the big hammer's going to come back on them. And maybe this is the beginning of the big hammer, and it's going to grow into something much bigger, hopefully, and it's a start.
Yeah, and I think that it's interesting how it is really starting from the ground up. I mean, our first day, our first hearing, we had 594 people sign up to testify. I mean, it was astronomical, you know, the number of people that came in, and it was, you know, about 10 to 1 in support of the bill. And then in terms of the written testimony, I think I read somewhere, I don't know, maybe 1,400 letters, emails written in, and then maybe 100 on the other side against the bill. But now, let me just say there's an alliance in Hawaii formed to really block and undermine and basically get rid of this legislation between the Farm Bureau, which is pretty much controlled by these biotech guys, and then getting a lot of the ranchers concerned, like maybe someday you're going to want to grow your own corn, and then maybe you're going to want to do GMO corn. So they've sort of putting together these powerful groups and doing petitions, freedom of choice, freedom to farm, the right of the farmer, and that, you know, this fringe element is out here, that let's just step on them, you know, as little ants. And they have no idea that it really is. I look at all the people that call me and write me and thank me, you know, all across the board. It's not, and many of them don't really want to come in and testify, but that are concerned. Mm. And I think the one thing, you know, no matter what, even if whether something happens and my bill, they undermine it or they veto or this. They're not going to change this momentum because it really has to do with knowledge. Ultimately, it is going to be that knowledge and informing people and that awareness that we're not going to let the be taken over in this way, and that we need to look out for our planet. And really, this is just the tip of the iceberg that we've had the luxury all of these centuries to just be able to do whatever we want and leave whatever wake we want and not be responsible. And the time has come that we can't do that anymore. Our planet is not just infinite, that it can absorb poisons, you know, more and more with the climate change and the water rising and the acidity of the water and the more toxins you put in. And in some ways, the way I look at this effort is that there's a lot of toxicity and a lot of harms that we can't do anything about, but this is one that we can.
Yeah.
And this one, we cannot just say, oh, well, it may hurt my pocketbook today. And friends, we got to work together and we got to help each other and help, you know, with the transition to where we realize that we have a stewardship responsibility and that what we do to the soil is what we do to the plants, which is what we do to those that eat it. And otherwise, we're going to end up with a world with no bees, with rampant, whether it's climate problems, food problems, disease problems, and our whole web of life is breaking down. You know, insects can get along without us, but we can't get along without them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that there is sort of a wake-up call here, and on that level, and also on the whole idea of who's going to, do we want multinational ag chemical companies controlling the world and controlling the food? And I mean, we even have proposals for state legislation that the state legislators agree that they will not, neither on a state level or a county level or in court, do anything to undermine or infringe on their right to freedom to farm in any way that they want. So I think if we don't, as a people across the world on a horizontal level, don't stand up to this, you know, we might as well just, you know, call ourselves marshmallows and we're just going to work towards a toxic planet in a you know, exponential speed.
Yeah, it does seem that, you know, I was looking at, you know, the big picture, and you see, you know, Fukushima, and you see the GMOs and the chemtrails, and it goes on and on. And I live in Washington State in the middle of the forest up here. And you know, we call the Forest Service the Deforest Service because they're basically an agricultural business, you know. You know, they passed all these laws here to stop, you know, a lot of the clear cutting because it's a scenic area. And they come in and they just clear cut anyway. And what's interesting is that the fine is so minuscule. It's just, you know, a couple extra trees. So they just clear cut anyway and pay the fine. And I hear the loggers talking about it, and they said, well, this is how you do it. You just get a big crew. You come in there and you just lay everything down. You do it really fast before anybody can say anything. And you pay the fine.
That's right.
Yeah. Cause the fine is so light, it doesn't matter. You just work it into the business plan.
That's right. And that's what you do. You do what you want and apologize later or pay that fine. Or usually what happens is they get out of it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's minimal. So
it's a good old boy network, you know.
It's a good old boy network. Mm-hmm. And that's right. And it's very powerful and they're very threatening. And if you don't want to be part of it, they're going to make you suffer.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's how it was. I mean, they didn't, you know, want me to be elected. And they did their best to pour money in on the other side.
I can see why. Yeah. Well, you know, the forest here is kind of interesting. We had a situation here, and it's kind of similar, but there was a major movement, and all these people tried to stop this along the White Salmon River in the scenic area, and there was this old growth area. And it's one of the last places where all the animals would go, and it's like a breeding ground, and they'd winter over there in this area. Well, they're going to come in and just level it and clear cut it. So, you know, a lot of people rose up and stopped them, and they actually, you know, held hands and stood across the roads and stopped the bulldozers and the equipment, you know. So it was amazing, you know,
that's good.
Yeah, and so they actually worked a deal out, and so the Forest Service says, okay, we're going to buy the land and we're going to protect it. And so they said, okay, you know, great. So they go, hey, we won. Everybody's celebrating. So the Forest Service, you know, buys the land, and then they issued the permits to clear cut it. And now you're dealing with the federal situation. So now you're going up against federal law, and they can throw you in jail forever if you protest. It's just unbelievable the way it worked out. And so these guys actually sold the land to the government. They got the highest dollar amount you could get to preserve it. And then the government turns around and issues permits to clear cut it, and they cut it anyway.
Well, you got to stop that.
Yeah.
You can't let that happen.
No, I know. It's I'm just watching this system the way it works, you know. And I thought, you know, you would think, you know, the will of the people has been very clear, you know, that we don't, you know. And I'm not against logging, you know. I think shelter cutting, you know, there are ways of maintaining a forest, and you can get the lumber you need, you know, and still maintain a forest. But, you know, it's just the way that the political arena works here, and the way it was done, and just the deceptions and the lies, and it was just total setup. And they knew all along, and they just set everybody up that was trying to preserve this property.
That those that are supposed to be there protecting these interests,
yeah,
are not. So that, and that's why I'm saying, in terms of the corporations, you know, it's not as if GMOs are inherently bad, or having a multinational corporation is inherently bad. But it's that they're allowed to just, you know, sort of unfettered use and abuse of the land and the resources. I mean, mm-hmm. the trees are right now, trees and grasses are sort of one of the new fronts of the whole GMO movement, and bringing in and what's going on in the South. I think in Alabama and Georgia, there are people protesting this. But whether GMO eucalyptus trees and GMO, whatever, pine trees, I'm not sure which kinds all they are, and then they're getting super weeds around them, and they're just sort of, you know, how do you deal with super weeds? Well, super weeds mean let's just pour more and more chemicals on them, and mm-hmm. so one of the things that the companies have done is gone into the feds and asked to be allowed to put higher and higher levels of these concentrations to be acceptable. And then now, even those higher and higher concentrations are not working. So they're coming in to get 2,4-D, and I think it's Bayer has their dicamba, which is like getting towards pure Agent Orange levels.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's just... And that's going back to where we started. You know, what direction are we going? Do we want diversified small ag farm, eco-friendly farms, or do we want to go into the direction that, you know, the future is poisons?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the future is increased, stronger poisons and toxins, and we become more, and this is the first, ours is the first generation where our kids, as a generation, are less healthy.
Whole
generation. So we are suddenly hitting a point where we have, you know, not taking care of our kids in ways because of our ignorance. We don't know what's going on. And that's why there were so many, Jade McGaff, an obstetrician on the island of Hawaii, came in and she showed us all these charts and what's happening and what she's finding. And all the midwives came in, and parents that are having children that are deformed. And I think one reason that Hawaii, or say Kauai, where they do three crops a year, is so vulnerable is that I know the U.S. Geological Department Division did a study looking at say, in Iowa and what the impacts on the water and ground is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's sort of, you know, there's some toxins of this. And then they looked at Mississippi, where you have a 9-month season as opposed to a 3-month season. And in Mississippi, they found in the river valleys that all the air is just like toxic. It just stays there. And in the water sources, in the surface waters, mm-hmm. from all of that toxicity in the air coming. So Hawaii, we have a 12-month season.
Yeah.
So it you just sort of see the logical progression or the common sense, you know, look what's happening and we got to, you know, we're what you're doing to us. So anyway, so that's why our island is saying, no, thank you.
Right.
You know, and some people say, well, Margaret, why aren't you doing something and stopping the food? Why, you know, if this is so bad, why don't you do that? Well, you know, I'm trying to focus on what was a bill that dealt with this. I'm sort of like protecting the soil and the microorganisms and the beneficial insects. And that indirectly protects the plants and indirectly protects the people and the farms. But hoping that that consumer level and federal level and state level will sort of go on, take things on a on the right to know and on the issues that would impact where they're legal issues. I've tried to keep my bill under the radar. You know, where I can legally, I'm an attorney as well, you know, go to court and defend this and not have somebody say, oh, sorry, you're preempted and sorry, you know, this law does that. But I'm sure it's still under attack.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I know there is going to be a groundswell of people waking up as all over Europe, people are figuring it out in India and Mexico, and they're seeing the ramifications of these GMO crops and what they're doing to their livestock and their children and things of that nature. And it I don't know what it is about the U.S. We seem to be the most hypnotized and dumbed down people on the planet. I think it's all the fluoride in the water and all the Roundup and everything else that's in the water that is creating, you know, us into a bunch of zombies. But I just wonder, like, when are we going to wake up and realize that, you know, we do need to start taking care of the land, the air, and the water for the next generations, right. and look at the long-term impact of, as you said, you know, we just can't keep creating better poisons and more efficient poisons and more toxic poisons, because, you know, that sacred circle of life, it always comes back to source. You know, it's always going to come back to us, because we're breathing the air, you know, we're eating the food and drinking the water. So I think people are finally starting to figure this one out.
Right. And I think it is, there's that change in attitude and a sense that a recognition that what each of us does, that it does have unintended consequences now and in the future. But I do think that people have a sense of that they can't do anything there. And I think that's why that's why I think that these biotech companies want to make sure that whether it's our county or another, don't succeed. Because what it does is empowers others.
Yes.
When they see, okay, this little county succeeded, and then Modesto in California did, and that one did in Alabama, you know, then you start getting this little army and network.
Yeah.
And the night before, I got a call late at night, and it was Russian television.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they wanted to interview. So I did this interview, and they said, well, let's do it where you're on, you know, on Skype. And I said, well, can't we just, you know, let's just talk on the phone. They said, no, this is of worldwide importance.
Yeah.
And this is people. So you have local people working together. And I think that it is, you know, why is it so important to have a little bill that grandfathers and everybody that's doing GMOs right now, why is it so important that they squash this? Because they want to make it clear no one is able to undermine their control of this whole food and seed and
yeah.
Government. So
yeah, welcome to Nazi Germany. Seems like that's where things are going with these groups. We're at the end of the hour. What is the best way that people can assist you and support you in this work, and maybe fire off some emails and letters to the mayor or whoever else needs a little push, you know, to get this through?
Well, I would say if they sent me an email and I will forward it on, and that way I know it gets here, for my Hawaii County Council email is mwillie, that's M-W-I-L-L-E, at co.hawaii, H-A-W-A-I-I, .hi.us. I'm going to say that again. M-W-I-L-L-E at co.hawaii.hi.us.
Great. And we'll put that on the site as well and
that would be good.
And get that out to people so they can really get behind this issue. Because to me, I think it's one of the number one issues on the planet, you know, that we need to get behind and make sure that we can maintain, you know, some kind of a decent, healthy food bank.
Yeah, we'd really appreciate your support. And then come visit our island, GMO-free direction. And thank you very much, James.
All right. Hey, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. We're out of time. I know we could cover more of this, but we'll get this out and get as many people as we can behind you and hopefully to, you know, hold this together and push it on through and make it happen.
Okay. Thanks again.
All right. Bye-bye. Take care.
Aloha.